Hello, this is Michael Zuber, and I wanted to thank you for choosing to spend a little time with One Rental at a Time. My life's mission is to help investors close 1 million rental properties. In order to tackle this crazy goal, I will need your help. If you like this episode or any of the content we produce, please share it on social media. If you get one of my books or perhaps one of our 500 cards, please take a selfie and tag One Rental at a Time. Now on with the show.
As many of you know, the 2008 residential real estate crash created a lot of millionaires. And if you watch Ken McElroy's video, it created even some billionaires. Well, that is the past. You and I do not have a DeLorean. We don't have a time machine. So I thought what we should do is talk about how the 2024 real estate crash is going to create many millionaires and, yes, even some billionaires. We're going to have this conversation with someone who went through the 08 crash with me and talk about what we are doing now to stack more wins, the one and only Anna Kelly. Hi, Anna.
Hi, great to be here with you. This is a really good topic and very, very timely. You know, I think we probably, you and I both, and the comments and other things that we do, the number one question is, what do we do now? You know, where is the economy going and what do we do now? And, you know, how can we protect our wealth, but also how can we grow it in the middle of a lot of uncertainty when a lot of, especially commercial real estate, are really crashing, you know? And I think that's kind of the main area in my perspective where there's going to be huge opportunity because there is truly a commercial real estate crash today. Not so much in the residential world, you know, by and large, but in commercial, there's definitely significant pain. And where there's pain, there is always opportunity for those that are gutsy enough and brave enough and have the wherewithal and experience to take down, you know, deals during that time.
Yeah, I think that is point number one for me is you have to appreciate where the greatest pain is. Because when you look at 08, it's obviously now in hindsight, it was residential real estate. I know I can speak for myself. I was picking up properties for below land value. It's hard to go wrong when you're doing that. Even if you're paying 12%, which I was paying 12% interest only on purchase price of properties bought at or near land value. So when I step back and think about 2024, I really want people to think about where's the greatest pain. I think that's it all starts there. And if I look at the stack, it is obviously office first. I just talked about on Daily Financial News, there was an office building in Denver that was sold for land value. I actually have the numbers because I actually have my notes in front of me. So the Denver office building, 437,000 square feet, 410 17th Street, if somebody wants to look it up. It sold for $127 million in 2019, Anna. It just transacted at land value, which is probably $25 million-ish, about 20%, something
wow.
Like that. In fact, Denver has 37% of all offices are currently up for lease. And it, guys, if you don't know office, there's even more that are not occupied because they sign 5 and 10 year leases. So it's right. Ugly in Denver. Not to be outdone, D.C., Washington, D.C., $60 million office building. If you want to look it up, it's at 1101 Vermont Avenue. 175,000 square feet. Again, sold for $60 million in 06, just transacted for $16 million. 16. So yeah. What does this mean? Most of us, myself included, and likely Anna, aren't going to be playing in office. But if you are out there, there has to be some distressed funds, some REITs, that are going to be playing in this space. Now, you're going to have to be careful because there's a lot of players that own these buildings that are now losing them. See Barry Sternlicht from Starwood. He's losing buildings in Oakland, California, and others. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be some players, some distressed funds that go after this, I would imagine, don't you think?
Absolutely. And it's already starting. And I think a couple things to point out here. One is if you are not experienced and have millions and millions of dollars of experience and liquidity available to you that it's going to cost to reposition, not only take down these assets, but reposition them and hold them in an office leasing environment that doesn't have a lot of light at the end of the tunnel, right? So you've got to have money to think about how can I maybe repurpose some of these buildings. And quite frankly, that's what a lot of these funds are doing. They're not buying the office to keep it office space because they know that the tenants may or may not come back. And if they do, it's going to take quite some time just because of the amount of supply of office space that's on the market versus what's probably a structural long-term decrease in demand as we've come to this work from home environment, you know, post COVID. So if you are a small fry, and I consider myself a small fry, a small fish in a really big pond. And yes, you know, you and I, Michael, have made millions of dollars. And yes, we're a big fry to many, many people. But when it comes to I'm taking down a distressed asset in a market that has a lot more pain ahead, you got to have guts and you have to have a plan for doing something different than what the current seller was doing that didn't work. So a lot of these deals that are happening, I'm already seeing them. They're buying them, they're tearing them down, and they're rebuilding something because to your point, they're buying them at land value or they're repositioning them into something else. So you see a lot of office to multifamily high-rise conversions that are going on or that are in, you know, development stages, trying to get approvals and permitting. So we see that a lot in the big cities that have a lack of affordable housing, you know, people coming in and saying, we're going to buy these properties, we're going to turn them into affordable housing. And then they're going to governments to try to get grants to help them to do that. So, you know, the point being here is you don't have to be the operator and have to have the millions of dollars to take advantage of the opportunity, but you need to find a REIT, for example, that does have a lot of years experience. And again, I'm not promoting BlackRock in any way, but BlackRock has had a track record of, you know, real estate that generally has gone pretty well.
I think you're referring to Blackstone, not to confuse BlackRock.
I'm sorry, Blackstone. I'm sorry.
Jonathan Gray.
I think BlackRock does actually have REITs as well. But yes, Blackstone is the big player.
Yes.
I apologize there. And they actually are creating right now REIT funds.
They are.
Now, they're high dollar investments, you know, to enter oftentimes. But, you know, they're creating new REITs, particularly that are opportunistic, that are going after these distressed assets. And the thing to be careful about when you're looking at a REIT or any type of mutual funds, but especially a REIT right now that deals in commercial real estate, is you don't want to get into an existing fund
that
already has the deals that are distressed that are going to fail. And they're hoping they can buy enough to kind of offset those returns because their gains are in and they're now washing out.
Yeah, they made their bed. Don't get in that bed. Yeah, you want a new fund.
Usually we say, you know, financial advisors, and I'm not anymore, but usually you would go and you'd say buy something that has a 5, 10, 20, 30 year track record as a mutual fund. But when you're dealing with commercial REITs, you want a company that has decades of track record, but you want a new fund that is going in to buy specifically, you know, these types of properties. So that's really important. One, you don't have to operate it. Two, find very experienced companies and operators that know what they're doing and have a lot of liquidity, not a lot of debt on their balance sheets versus the assets on their balance sheets, because you don't want to, you know, go from one problem to another. And you've just got to really do your research to find, you know, where those companies are and where those opportunities are. It's really, really important.
Yeah. And then I step back when I kind of work down where the pain is and where it's most acute and frankly still growing. The next place I go to is multifamily value add. You and I both know there's lots of syndicators, financial engineers who basically over-engineered the deal, short-term debt, bad assumptions, and they're just stuck. And I actually think some of these deals are going to be foreclosed, clearly, and some have already been foreclosed. But I actually think there's going to be quite a few that just go to new ownership, and you're going to be taking over the debt structure. You know, maybe there's some Fannie Freddie debt that's long-term, you know, got 8 years left on it or something. You're going to have some capital infusion hits a new investor pool. But I think there are some operators out there. Ken McElroy talks about it. You know, he's looking at deals all the time just to kind of kick out the old operator, put new person in, infuse the building and move forward. I think there's going to be some opportunity there as well. Again, net new deals, not bailing out old deals. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot, you know, to be wrapped around in this part of the discussion. But one, you know, there are quite a few deals that were done with assumable loans. And so, you know, for those properties where, you know, that's mostly what I'm looking at when I'm looking at properties where there's opportunity, I'm looking to kind of do deals where there's still a large assumable loan at a really low interest rate that has 7 to 10 years runway on them. And there are those deals. We actually took one down about a year and a half ago that was a 7-year fixed interest only CMBS loan. So, you know, we took over it. It was a long process to get that done, much longer than a traditional purchase. But there are deals like that where transactions still are happening. Now, they were going at a premium that still didn't make sense, but sellers and buyers are kind of finally at about an equilibrium on the newer stock. And so I think with multifamily, there's definitely opportunity to take over some existing rate debt. Most lenders that are not like CMBS, commercial mortgage-backed securities, or they're not, you know, Fannie and Freddie deals, don't want a new buyer to come in and take on the debt. Number one, it was at low interest rates. And so they're losing, the banks are already losing money on the interest rate spread that was locked in low versus what they could get today. And they've got properties that are worth less. So the lender may come in and offer you new financing if you have the wherewithal to do that, but you are going to be at today's higher rates and higher coverage ratio requirements, lower LTVs. And so I don't see a lot of lenders just saying, hey, we'll bring in another buyer to take over that debt. They're just going to say, we're foreclosing, we got it. And now they reach out to the buyers and say, we'll give you a great deal. We just want to get it off of our books. So that is happening.
And again, I think in that situation, which I think will be a lion's share of them, as you indicate, unfortunately, that means all the equity is gone. Right. If you were in the deal from the beginning, you're unfortunately going to take the L.
Yes.
You're also, unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize this, but if your operator did, what is that?
Bonus depreciation.
Bonus depreciation. You're probably going to take a tax hit as well in the subsequent year, because you're going to have to undo that, unfortunately. But yeah, the net new deal will be sold at debt, and then you put on 20-25% equity of that, and the building will survive until the things turn around. Other thing, so if I keep working our way down, then there's where, at least where I'll say I play, because I don't play in the big stuff. I don't syndicate. I don't do that. But there's going to be plenty of mom and pop landlords. We know that 10,000 baby boomers are retiring every day. We know that baby boomers, eventually I bought from them, don't want to manage the headache. They want to go enjoy the last 20 years, whatever it is. I think there's going to be plenty of baby boomers who are open to some, if not all, seller financing of their smaller units. So they maintain income, they don't pay taxes, it's an installment sale, just all of those things. I've worked with the Velocity Mortgage. They have a 90% CLTV, combined loan to value, where you can, in theory, very easily get the seller 60% cash, 50% first, 10% equity for me, the buyer, then the seller takes 40% back at a lower rate. So I can get a blended interest rate below market. I can get the seller their price, and we could all win. So I see a lot of that kind of coming as well. What do you think?
Absolutely. In fact, I just had a conversation this morning, not knowing what we were going to talk about, with one of my students, and we're looking at a multifamily deal in Texas that was like 1970 vintage, something like that, selling at a really nice price per door, but it was still at a 6.5 cap. And I said, you know, that's not enough risk premium. And so, you know, when you're just looking at a retail, one of the interesting things about multifamily, you know, we think of it as one bird, but it's really, I call it four different birds: A class, B class, C class, D class. They really are. The risk premium, the risk reward is different as you go down the letters, right? So A is brand new, you know, very nice high-end apartment buildings and really nice areas, high, you know, way above average income earners generally. Then you've got class B that are usually less than 10 to 20 years old. Class B used to be 10. Now it's kind of like 10 to 20. And then C is kind of anything older than that, or in areas that are medium income, a little bit older. And then D is kind of war zones. You never want to invest in D's. They're never as good as they look on
the reality. Never matches the spreadsheet.
Never. It's like alligator, alligator, alligator in bold, right? Don't do it. C minus even, right? But here's the thing, and the point about seller financing as well as opportunity in multifamily. What's interesting, and I just read this article this morning and had a lot of good statistics, that over the last several years, Michael, when syndication became really popular, usually what happens and is we go in and if whatever the Treasury's paying historically, Class A brand new multifamily has required a 2.3% risk premium. So if the Treasury's at 4, I want to buy brand new at 6.3 today, not the Class C minus alligator at a 6.5 cap. But what happened is over the last couple of years is people quit getting any premium for buying B and C and older assets because they wanted a value add. They'd buy C and D asset stuff at a 5 cap when A was going at a 4 cap and there wasn't enough cash in the deal anyway to pay investors, but they just hoped that the market would keep bringing those rents up and the values way up and they could still sell it for a premium. That's the whole point of value add. What has happened is finally through all of the interest rates being higher for longer is there's a real risk premium spread. So the A-class stuff is starting to trade. They've kind of found a new equilibrium. You're getting a lot of newer properties trading and funds starting to scoop them up, to your point, well below what they last sold for. Where they're going to make make a lot of wealth as values come back up over time. But the C class stuff, the B and C and D class stuff, and instead of just income level, I'll just say, let's say, vintage before 1980 to 90, really probably before 1990, I'm going to call C class stuff. What's happened is those investors who didn't buy in the last couple of years, the mom and pops, to your point, the people like me that have a few hundred units that I'm holding long term, right? We don't have to sell. And so the sellers are not going to sell and go, I'm going to give you a big discount in price because cap rates have gone up. They don't have to sell. But if they're older and they've had those properties for 20, 30 years, they want the income stream. They do not want to sell for a loss. And so that, to your point and to what I told my coaching student this morning, it doesn't mean that a deal is definitely no if they're asking too much. It means you need to be able to structure creatively to create a win-win. And when there's pain, it's not an opportunity to just go out and be a vulture and take advantage of people. It's an opportunity for you to truly make win-win deals where you create opportunity for you and you let the seller win too. You create opportunity for them. And so one of the best ways to do that, especially right now, is I might pay more than I want to. I might say, I'd rather not pay a 6.5 cap. I think it's more of an 8 cap. But if I can get them to give me, 5% down, 10% down instead of 20 or 30% down, let's say they want to finance all of it. Great. That's even better. But if not, I can go to a bank for part of it, to your point. I can get them to finance the rest. And I can say, if I can get you your price and I can get you a cash flow stream from someone who has the wherewithal to pay you, has good credit, and I pay you every single month for the next 10 years. Now, I'd like to start at 20. Then I come back out to 10, right? Yeah. Don't go in at 2 or 3 years and hope to refi. Yeah. Like, you want a long-term deal.
10,
so
10's the minimum. Yep.
Yeah, I go in and, 10 or 20 years, I'll make you payments. A lot of these older landlords, they want the income stream. They want to retire. They can't afford to lose that income stream, but they don't want to deal with the headaches of tenants, the maintenance of properties that they're getting too old to want to be able to, handle or not be able to do themselves. And they don't want to pay a capital gain. And this is really important. If you've got a couple million-dollar property and you've depreciated all of it, over 20 years, 27 and a half years, everything you make, if you sell it, is taxed, by the government. And especially with capital gains taxes likely to go up much higher, the rates much higher in future years, people don't want to be paying 30, 40% capital gains. So if you can structure a deal to pay interest-only payments, Michael, and no principal, you can delay their capital gain for as long as they'll let you finance that deal because they only pay gain as they are paid back principal on their deal. So this is an amazing time to do seller finance deals. And that is really where my focus is right now. And what I'm looking to do over the next several years is buy more and more properties for my own portfolio, for my own family's portfolio, go in with seller financing terms that work really well for the seller and that I can hold really long term. The value add becomes the gravy on top, but you make the cash work today or you don't do the deal.
Absolutely. Again, I think this 90% CLTV that Velocity Mortgage, Stephen Dow has is extremely powerful. It's a Swiss Army knife. It allows you to do, it allows you to get into a multifamily by giving the seller their price, giving them up to 60% cash, and you could get a blended interest rate first and second that's below market. It's like, absolutely, why is that not a win-win? And then absolutely, if I keep working down the stack and we finally get to residential real estate, I first, unfortunately, have to say we're not going to repeat the GFC. It's not going to be, you know, the properties I bought in Fresno, we're not going to go to 75 grand for 300. However, there is some pain in residential. Mm-hmm. I think about some cities that got in you know, got flooded with Airbnb and VRBO. Palm Springs is a great example in California. There was a property I just read about the other day that sold for something like $1.1 million. That given, you know, the new regulation, it was foreclosed and sold at 600.
Wow.
There's a lot of pain coming into certain cities that yes, maybe got over indexed on short-term rentals. And now the city or whatever has changed the rules. There's some real pain in those markets.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the key there's an old adage, don't catch a falling knife in the stock market, right? But you got to be the same way with real estate. So if you're in an area that got really overbuilt and oversupplied, and they can't keep short-term rentals full or long-term rentals full, you've got to steal it, but you've got to be prepared to hold it for a really long period of time. And yeah, I can tell you, when I bought a couple vacation rentals that I knew I was buying kind of at the top, but I bought them in areas where I want to hold long-term and locked in, you know, 30-year fixed rates at 3% and 4%, and some even below 3%. I bought them knowing that there could be a couple years of pain. The values could fall a little, rentals could fall a little, but I'm going to hold it for the long term. And so when you're going into these markets where you think you're getting a great deal compared to what they sold for last year or the year before, make sure that you can hold them and that they cash flow, even if the values fall, and that you've got a really good renter pool that you can put in there for a long time, that it's a growing city and not a dying city. That's really important. So don't think you're going to go in and flip the property in a year or two. And so you leverage your house and you buy the property hoping that, oh, I can, you know, I can get a good deal. I can put short-term loan, you know, mortgages on it, and then I'll refi when the rates come down. Because if they don't, you're in trouble. But if the cash flow today in those markets where you can get a steal on the value, you know it cash flows, you know you can keep them 90% occupied plus, then you buy them for the long term. And then if they go up in value again, it's, again, it's the cherry on the top. So yeah, buy for cash flow right now. That'd be, you know, again, kind of putting on my old advisory hat. Like, I want to tell everybody, you either buy at any season of your life, depending on where you are, you're going to prioritize growth, which is buying for equity and appreciation of whatever the asset is. Preservation, like, I'm going to preserve what I have in something that's not going to go down in value. That's usually later in life. Or cash flow. And most people want cash flow. Most of you are in your phases of life where you need more income so that you can retire or make work optional down the road. I see too many people, Michael, when these shifts start to happen in the market, buy for equity, assuming that the values are always going to go way back up and that it'll happen quickly, like the Fed will cut rates and mm-hmm, we won't have a recession and values are going to skyrocket. Could it happen? Sure. Will it happen? We don't know. It depends on your market, right? But I've learned that if it doesn't cash flow today and you are robbing Peter to pay Paul in your own, you know, financials just to get a good deal on a price, you could be really setting yourself up for trouble. So my suggestion would be, even if you're an equity and appreciation person primarily, make sure you got 6 months expenses, you know, to live on, and that you're investing an amount, you know, that's going to create some cash flow and return. Don't buy alligators. Don't get sucked into, it's a good deal compared to last year. Well, last year was probably unrealistic. And just make sure your deals cash flow and plan to hold them long term. And if rates come down, you can refinance at that point. If they go way up in value, that's amazing. But just make sure, that would be my only caution. Like, as you're looking for opportunity, make sure they cash flow so you don't end up being the next person in the line of, I paid too much and it's not producing.
Yeah. At the end of the day, folks, I feel very good about saying that the 2024 real estate crash will create many millionaires and yes, even some billionaires. I will coach you that you need to seek opportunities where there is great pain. I will coach you not to catch a falling knife or get involved in deals that or portfolios that already have some ugly ducklings, be in a new fund with experience. If you are in the residential space, I think there are some opportunities coming in busted Airbnbs, maybe in the luxury market. If there's interest in the small multifamilies, which is where I'm specifically focused, understanding the flexibility of that 90% CLTV, how to talk seller financing, how to talk taxes, how to talk maintaining income, all great stuff. Anna, where can they find you?
Great. You can find me here almost every week on your show. You can find me on social media at Anna Kelly REI Mom. And for deal review, coaching, and consulting, you can find me at AnnaKellyInvesting.com.
Thank you so much.